Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Fingers Crossed Podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Sierra, and this is Christina Vetter, also known as Christy. I don't know why I announced that like I was in a
boxing
Super Bowl ring or something. Boxing ring. You do boxing, though, so maybe it is fitting.
I mean, I don't usually go like head-to-head kind of boxing. Like, it's usually against a bag and not a person, but maybe that would be...
I mean, they're not like shouting out your name, Christy, Christy.
Yeah, no, there's maybe no like entrances, which would make it more exciting, I think. But yes, no, it's just kind of the personal battle instead of the duel.
The against people. Well, you got to start somewhere. Once you get good with the bag, then you can
beat
up the
today
person,
a bag, tomorrow Logan Paul in the biggest fundraiser this internet has ever seen. Yes.
Then I will actually get to shout out your name into the ring and I will bring a sign. Anyway, today we are talking about Burnout Part 2. No, not the racing car game. We are talking about the chronic condition affecting millennials and people from all generations. And last week we talked a bit about the kind of how it's a systemic issue affecting specifically millennials due to the circumstances we've kind of been thrown into with the housing crisis, student loan crisis, the changing of generational expectations, the changing of remote work, the changing of moving around, kind of all those things that have led into this sort of chronic millennial burnout. And today we wanted to dive more into it because we couldn't really fit in everything we wanted to last episode. So we have a couple other things we want to talk about this episode, including sort of the physical aspects of it with the fatigue and as well as the difference between active rest and passive rest, something I've recently come to understand, a couple things about like healthy coping mechanisms versus unhealthy, as well as a bunch of your responses from last week about your burnout situations that we didn't get to. So anyway, that's a little bit of an overview of what we're going to talk about today.
I promise it'll be fun, not at all boring, even though burnout is depressing to talk about. It'll also be helpful, I think, to kind of like, I don't know about you, but I didn't even understand some of the symptoms of it and the long-term kind of, you know, overall just stress weighing on your body physically and mentally, just what it can do. And I just think it's really helpful to hear other people's accounts and like experiences with it too, because you're like, oh wow, like that actually makes a lot of sense and I relate to that, even though you never really would have thought about it in the context of burnout. So hopefully it's interesting and also kind of builds on what we talked about last week while giving a little bit more context, because there really is just a lot to say about it. Like, it's such a huge problem, like Sierra mentioned, in our generation and, you know, just commonly today with how social media is everywhere and just thinking you need to be go, go, go and hustle culture and all that. But I think there's a lot to be said about just like the ways that it's kind of like fixed its way into what we're used to and how we can actually, you know, combat it. And you're not just subjected to eternal burnout always that we have to live with. Like, there's little ways that you can hopefully make it better. So that's what we're going to talk about. I think it'll be an interesting topic, but it's been a big week. It has been craziness in the past week, and we have a lot of exciting life updates too. And I have been sitting on the edge of my seat, so excited to hear from Miss Sierra Michelle Green. I can't do the boxing announcement as well as you can, but
thank you.
Her brand new job has so many updates with it, I'm sure. So she had a first week, and I
wanted to hear.
Please.
I did. I started on Tuesday at my new job, which I'm just so grateful to have. I feel like a huge weight has been lifted off my shoulders. I think anyone who starts a new job probably feels that. Granted, again, like it's not like all roses and sunshine. It's been all stressful also, and feeling again the imposter syndrome and like the learning curve and all of that. But I just feel so, after 3 months of trying to get a job, I feel so relieved to have one, to have it be official, and to also know that like, this has been a good feeling, is that everything in my life has led me here. Right. Like, I wouldn't have this job if I wouldn't have made certain choices. And sometimes when I was making those choices earlier on down the path, I was unsure about them and kind of like, maybe this isn't the right thing. But like, I wouldn't be where I am right now without them. And it made me feel, I guess, just some sense of pride in that, you know, I have created a path, and whether or not it's the path and beyond for the rest of my life, like I have created something. So anyway, like I just, some of those feelings have come up that has been good. But anyway, so more about the job. The position is essentially a YouTube channel manager. And I'm going to be managing different like big brands or media companies, like managing their YouTube presence. So like their uploads, working with a graphic designer on their thumbnails. They're technically like clients within a larger organization that manages tons and tons of clients, and they have a handful of different channel managers that are assigned, you know, between 3 and 5 clients that they work on their channels. And yeah, I've had 4 days so far, and it's kind of just been a lot of onboarding and learning like what my specific duties are going to be like daily, like, you know, what do I do with this client? What do I do with this client? What is this client's style? How do I work with them? What kind of programs do they use? You know, like some clients are, you know, we talk exclusively over email. Some are exclusively over Slack. Some we use this third party site. So we do boards on Trello, like, you know, just different things like learning, you know, what each one does. And on my first couple days, I felt very lost just because I didn't really have a super clear path of my onboarding, like who I was shadowing or who I was under and what areas. But then in my last couple days, I got to do like several good hours of like major shadowing, which was really, really helpful. God bless screen share, because normally shadowing would be like in an office, you're like following someone around, like seeing their day to day. But I literally was just like on screen share with the girl who holds my current position, because she's transferring to another department. So it actually was super, there's going to be a direct handoff. So I'm able to like ask her about any questions.
That's so helpful.
Which is really, really helpful. And she's been really nice. And I think she's excited too, because she's really excited to move to her next spot. But I think it's nice for her to know that, you know, she's not screwing anybody over. You know, she is leaving somebody else in charge of her position. So I'm definitely, I think Monday, I'm finally going to start taking on some responsibility in the sense of like actually doing the stuff instead of just watching the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like client calls and everything.
Yeah. And you know, kind of becoming more of a presence in like doing the hands-on stuff. I got to do a little bit of it Friday, but sort of the gal who's currently in my position like watched me do it to make sure I was doing it right. And then I think we're going to continue doing more of that tomorrow meaning Monday, because we're recording this on Sunday, just for those of you listening. So yeah, I'm very excited about it though. I feel really confident that I will nail this with a little bit of time to get over the, you know,
training
transition
wheels.
Period.
Yeah.
Yeah, the learning curve. But everyone's been really nice. I've enjoyed everyone I've spoken to. And what I'm excited about is there's a lot of potential if you're really organized to get ahead and, you know, to like get work done in
yeah,
advance,
like work at
for
your
future
own pace.
Weeks. Yeah, and get stuff, you know, if you know you've got 20 things to accomplish in the next 2 weeks, if you want to, you can really kind of pace how and when you want to do them.
Nice. How was you it know, starting which, remotely? Wasn't it kind of like strange when it feels like you're like at work, but then you're in your own home, and then you're in a meeting with new people, and then you're like, I don't know, it's just weird to be like in a new workplace, but starting remotely, and you haven't done that yet. So I'm curious like how you found it.
It was weird. Yeah, especially because my other job I did, my last job was fully in person. Mm-hmm. So it was very, very different. It honestly felt easier than being, because I felt like I still was within a safe space. Like if I was getting overwhelmed, as soon as the meeting is off, I have a moment to breathe and like let my hair down in my own kitchen.
Exactly.
Like I'm not like having to still put on appearances. And then if I need a moment by myself, go, you know, to the bathroom stall and like hyperventilate for a second, like you do in school or like in, you know, in-person work, I actually got to kind of be in my own space for a second.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
I love that feeling of hanging up a call and just like collapsing on your bed for a second if you need it, like literally just replenishing when you need to take a beat. I think that's so helpful, especially in the beginning when you're like just getting your bearings and it's overwhelming, like for any job to start learning everything.
I feel super privileged to be working from home. I realize a lot of people don't get that choice. I mean, again, as someone who worked 2 years in restaurants, I was a theme park performer. Like, you know, I've been a nanny. Like, I've done so many things that you literally cannot do from home. So I understand. But after this first week, like, I feel spoiled. Like, I understand the social aspect. And I look forward to maybe doing a 1 day a week hybrid on down the line. Because they're introducing that, but I really like it. Like I like being able to, you know, again, just have more time to myself, not having to commute, not having to like having time to have little breaks throughout the day in my own space and do what I want with them, you know, mm-hmm. not having to look a certain way or dress a certain way. I mean, granted, I've dressed up I definitely did the classic like work from home look where I had like a sweater and a necklace
sweatpants.
On. And then I had like sweatpants and leggings on bottom or pajama pants.
Yeah. It's definitely like that for the beginning too. It's like you're still gonna like kind of dress up or like try and look nice for calls, and then literally like I don't know when, but a switch flips probably like a month in, and you just don't care at all, and you just roll up straight from bed. And I never even wear makeup anymore because it's just like I'm in my house. But yeah, definitely from the beginning, like you still want to make good first impressions, but it's just different because it's virtual and everything, so it's kind of just like an adjustment. But
it's also been an adjustment because Jason started his brand new job this week as the employee engagement coordinator. Employee engagement coordinator for his new company he's working for. And he's working from home too. So you got two people who are working from home in a one bedroom apartment, taking a lot of Zoom calls and like things like that. So we're definitely trying to figure that out. Thankfully, we're not in a studio. I mean, we have two, like, someone can go in the bedroom and shut the door, and then someone can go in the living room, you know. So we have, you know, actually there are two doors between the bedroom and the living room because there's like a hallway door. It doesn't need to be there, but it's there anyway. So like we technically can shut two doors. So as far as noise, that's really nice. But we're still trying to figure that out because neither of us wants to be like working in the bedroom anyway. So there are naturally there are like kinks that you got to figure out and iron out. But I am super grateful to be working from home, and it takes a lot of the stress off because all I have to stress about is the physical work I'm doing. I don't have to worry about getting there on time. I don't have to worry about traffic. I don't have to worry about looking nice. I don't have to worry about...
And you never realize how much time that takes until you're not doing it. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, so nice. Like I literally, when I would go to my other job, I would get up at 6:45 every morning so that I could... I was also on camera so that I could look nice, be presentable. I'd pack my lunch. I would like, you know, took me 50 minutes to get there, like, you know, all this stuff. And it was just like, I felt like I was packing for like sleepaway camp every time I left work, especially God forbid if I had to do something after work, like say meet up with a friend or I was going to go grocery shopping. I would need to bring a jacket in case it got cold later. And then I would bring a snack for after work. And it was just like, I feel like I'm literally leaving on an adventure every time I'm going to work, but it's not a good adventure. It's like not an adventure I want to be on, please. So anyway, yes. Long story short, first week was good, a little stressful at times. But I did get to go to coffee with a couple of coworkers. They usually on a certain day of the week, they get together at a coffee shop and do work together. And they invited me on my first week, which was really nice. So I went and joined them for that. Yeah, so that was really great. Also get to, you know, put in a little FaceTime, but it was so nice that it wasn't like an entire day in the office. It was like 2 hours in the afternoon. Yeah, you know, exactly. Like it was... I didn't have to. They're like, yeah, after the 1 o'clock meeting, we go to this coffee shop. Meet us there if you're free. And I was like, I can do that. I can do a socialize for 2 hours and then go back to my cave. Exactly. That sounds great.
Back to my cave. Well, yay. I'm so happy for you. I know you've been looking forward to this for so long. And I saw that we got a lot of like messages and comments wishing you well on your first week.
I did. I actually... My personal Instagram, I got like 5 or 6 DMs from you guys wishing me a good first day. It was really sweet.
Well, I'm sure that those made it even better. But yes, I've been eager to hear this update, and it sounds like nothing but good news. So yay. Yeehaw. That's a win.
Yeah. I look forward to continuing to let you guys know how it's going, you know, in the future.
Good stuff. Yeah, so other than that, I mean, we do, I guess this would be a good point to discuss with this new full-time job of Sierra's and us balancing everything in our lives and trying not to be burnt out and juggling many hats. We have discussed a new chapter of Fingers Crossed where we're going to try and do something that makes it a little more manageable for us and hopefully doesn't, you know, disrupt too much of your weekly routines of listening. But instead of uploading every single week, we are going to switch to bi-weekly episodes so that we're able to actually like take the time that we need in our own busy schedules to make quality episodes and have some time to edit them in between and everything, because it's just us working on this podcast. It's literally a two-woman show, running the Instagram, editing the podcast, recording, doing research, all of that. And so now that Sierra is working, and we would usually record Fridays, which is when I don't work for my main job, now that she's working on Fridays and we have a time difference, it's just very difficult for us to like make the time that it needs. So we've decided that we think it'd be helpful on that front to do bi-weekly instead, and then just do every other week. You'll get a Fingers Crossed episode, because we obviously like love this platform a lot and love hanging out with you guys and talking about these topics that we think are relevant to our audience and interesting, and you know, having this project together. But I think it's just time that with our lives naturally evolving, it just makes more sense for us. So hopefully you understand. Yeah. Anything you'd like to add, yes. Sierra?
No, you covered it. Yeah, it's pretty much just that when we first started this podcast, remember it was July of 2020, and that was literally peak pandemic, and Christy and I had nothing to do, and we had everything but time. I mean, time is the only thing we had. What am I trying to say? We had all the time in the world. That was the phrase I was
We had nothing for. In this life except time.
We had time and nothing else. Okay, we had the time to record and dedicate many, many, many hours a week to the podcast. To
it, like, having became our full-time job in that time. Yeah, like we were doing that every single day.
Three times a week. We had, like, a whole posting calendar. And our Google Doc for our episodes was so organized. We had, like, merch plans, like, all of these things. And, you know, it sort of became understandable why most podcasters, like, that's what they do all the time. People who are, like, really successful, they run their podcast. And that is their job. And so now that I have a full-time job, and I guess, I would do that if we could. We're just like, we're not at that level right now, and we just don't have the ability to commit to that. You know, Christy's pursuing careers in other avenues. So, it's just kind of like, we don't want this to be a source of like stress or resentment for us, because we love doing it and we love you guys and we love the topics that we get to talk about and like these conversations we get to have. But again, we also... super fitting, like Christy said, love with the episode of burnout. We have to be realistic, and you know, in our time off from work, we want to spend time with friends and partners and family, and you know, sightseeing and exploring and resting and like all of those things we need to be doing. So we hope you understand, and that we're going to do the best to just adjust in the best way possible, so that we don't have to lose anything, but we also don't have to lose our sanity, yeah, as Christy said. So yeah, that's kind of our update. Before we dive into the episode, Christy, any big work or life announcement you wish to share?
Let's see. I mean, this coming week, I've been like building up towards this for so long, which is like the projects that I've been talking about that have been like taking up a majority of my energy and focus. But finally, this week, I've been doing a lot of stuff for the UN Commission on the Status of Women. It's like a annual couple of weeks of events and countries meeting. This week, I've been building up towards a lot of things for that, and it is finally at the doorstep. So after this week, I will be done with that project, and I'm very, very excited for it. And it's just been a lot of prep and stress and work. But I think, you know, when you finally get to the part where you're able to see the like fruit of your labor, it's very satisfying. So I just hope everything goes smoothly that we've been planning and organizing and coordinating and all that good stuff. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be good. It'll be pretty crazy, but in the best way. So yeah. And then next weekend, this still isn't like 100% that it's happening, but it's like 95%. So I'm going to say it. But I am going on a work trip next week. So the week after you're listening to this, I'm going to the Netherlands once again for work, and we have some like meetings with partners that I'm going to attend in person. So it's kind of a quick trip. I'm just going to be there for the week and then fly back on Friday. But now I'm like kind of, I wasn't sure that it was going to happen until this past week. So I've been, you know, now turning on a dime and doing a bunch of preparations for that. But yeah, it's been good. It's a very busy time on the work front, but I kind of think it's just going to be like that for a while. And through spring, it's just like a busy season. But exciting things. Like, this is obviously a great opportunity, and I'm really grateful for it and excited to go back. I just never actually got around to fixing my suitcase, which was one of those
errand fatigue.
Oh my God, you guys. I got caught with errand fatigue like 50 times this week. And I think maybe I'm just noticing it more now that we've put a definition on it and understand it. If you didn't listen last week, then that's just kind of when you have a million little things to do that you just put off because you have other things that are stressing you out. And my broken suitcase is one of them. But, you know, we're just going to use it anyway because it still functions with one zipper and hope for the best. But I haven't flown with it.
You just said zipper.
Zipper.
Zipper zipper.
Yes, exactly.
Do you not have a backup, like a second suitcase?
I only have one suitcase.
Gotcha.
Yes. Anyway,
can you, like, ask any of your friends to borrow one? I'm sure
they mean, no, it still works. It's just one zipper works and one doesn't. So the one zipper will carry me through. And I'm not going to pack as much this time. It's also I'm going for less time, which is helpful, but we'll see. Knock on wood.
All right.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, can't wait to see your Instagram story of it broken again in the middle of the street.
God, we're not manifesting that. Oh, man. And hopefully I don't have to trudge it through any streets because I'm only staying in one place this time and I'm not, like, transferring in between. And that's when it all went to hell last time. But this time I have a good feeling, you know? We're manifesting a safe suitcase trip.
I got a feeling.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm trying to think other fun things that have happened in life. I went bowling and I actually got a strike this time, you guys. Nice. I'm very bad at bowling, but I only got a couple gutter balls and I was very proud of my performance. So that was good. And yeah, just a fun weekend catching up with friends. It snowed again and I thought that we were done with snow and I'm over it and I just want it to be spring. But yesterday it was just snowing and we were like, you know what? We're not going to do anything. So we just watched movies all day and had a cozy day. And yeah, it's been just like chill in New York mostly.
All right. Well, we've had a very long intro, so we don't want to keep going too long. Let's dive into this episode. Christy, I'm glad that you are potentially traveling again because that's exciting and travel is always fun. And I wish you luck with suitcase. That this week is not crazy, too crazy, just a little crazy.
Just good crazy.
Just not so much crazy that you can't manage. So yes, let's dive into the second part of Burnout Part 2. We have a couple more articles that we wanted to talk about with you guys and reference, put links in for you guys to read. This first one is a Forbes article that we found called Young People, You're Burnt Out and That's Okay.
Last week we touched on kind of how the more concept of you know, how burnout has kind of permeated millennials specifically and why younger generations might be more poised to it. And we went into the definitions a little bit there. So we don't want to be too redundant if you already listened to that. So definitely go listen if you want to hear more. But this article kind of touches on, you know, this is written in after the pandemic started. This came out in June of 2021. So it kind of talks about, because burnout essentially is just like a long-term stress, even short-term, but just kind of like heightened stress on your body and on your mind. So it kind of talks about how burnout can come from, you know, more high-stress situations than you might not be used to operating in, like a pandemic. So specifically here, they say, you've been sitting in this anxiety every single day for over a year now, and as the world starts to open up, the sense of fear is decreasing, and now the exhaustion of the comedown is setting in. Which this was written before the other variants came up of the pandemic. So that's a whole nother thing. But yes, let's just take it for face value. So there's one part that knows that it's okay to feel burnt out. There's a study that they cited that's actually interesting. It says it shows burnout is at a record high right now, with 52% of participants reporting feeling burned out and 67% saying burnout increased during the pandemic. There's another part of you that feels like you were smarter, stronger, or maybe more focused. If you were, you could simply put your head down and keep going, which is just not the case. Like, I think a lot of people that ignore their burnout and just kind of keep playing into it, it's only going to set you up for failure later. So that's why.
And that's what we talked about last week is that a lot of it is our culture that has encouraged people to push through that because of the, like, you know, hustle and can do culture that, you know, we have to, you know, to ignore that and keep pushing through and do more, more and more.
Yeah. And that's what this says here is the real reason why young people like yourself are struggling with burnout is not that you don't know that you're burnt out. It's what you need to do to address your burnout goes against so many of the habits and behaviors you adopted in school and brought with you to the workplace, which I think is so interesting because we talked about that last week too. Like, us in college were, you know, the sleep when you're dead kind of go, 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 running from one sorority function to the library to study to blah, 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 just to, like, stay afloat. And I feel like that is such a thing in school too, is that we have this culture of, like, drinking a bunch of Red Bulls and staying up until 3 a.m. to write this paper last minute. And you just develop those habits where it, when you bring it with you to the workplace, it's not necessarily a sustainable lifestyle. And it's ingrained in you that that's how you work when that's really not how you contribute to your life, I would say, in, like, a healthy, balanced way. So it says that for years now, young adults have been struggling with perfectionism. And according to the American Psychological Association, perfectionism has been on the rise among young people since 1980. That's so interesting. I didn't hear that statistic before. But there are several factors that contribute to this increase in perfectionism. But the one thing that affects young people the most is social media and the messages they receive as they scroll. So we did touch on that last week, too, just how, I mean, the comparison game contributes to it because you feel like everyone else is doing a million things. And why can't you do that, too, and do a million and five? And you want to show off that you're, you know, able to juggle so much and accomplish everything and blah, blah, blah. And then it's just kind of feeding into this arms race of everyone's showing the good parts of it and no one's showing that they're stressed or burnt out or exhausted at the end of the day. So it's impossible not to scroll and like feel that comparison get to you and make you just want to add more onto your plate when you're not able to sustain it.
Yeah, I know social media, like, has the power to do good by exposing, you know, new perspectives and giving people a voice and all those good things. But like, since I have spent less time on social media, I have been so much more focused on my own life and the things in my life that make me happy. And, you know, just focusing on my life as the central thing that I think about, not what everyone else is doing and all the blessings or joys that everyone else is having. Like it makes it so much easier.
Definitely. So this says you're at a crossroads right now. You can embrace your burnout and address the problem by making some daily changes, or you can keep scrolling and comparing and believing the only way to feel valuable is to achieve. You have an opportunity to redefine success and change your relationship with stress. So this article gives three different changes that you can make every single day to combat this, which is what we kind of wanted to focus this episode on. Like, we can complain about how stressed we all feel for a while, and it's definitely good to like recognize what it means and where it comes from. But we also thought it would be useful to kind of position it with some little things you can do or ways that you can look at it to combat it in your everyday life. So this just gives three, and we're going to go into other things too and more into the depth of, you know, the actual physical stress on your body and other symptoms, especially because we got a lot of messages that are like, how do you even know if you're burnt out? Or what if you're working through burnout and you don't even realize it? Because again, it's just so ingrained in us. But here's the few little things that this article suggests.
Number one is to set boundaries around work. When you went from working in an office to working at home, you quickly filled your commute time, chats and colleagues and drinks and whatever with oftentimes more work. No more commute. You can start work an hour earlier, no more colleagues, no more social time. So you can get the picture. So stop replacing free time and space with work and more work. And stop thinking that if you're not working, you're not a hard worker. It's really tough because you entered the workforce at a time where you had the ability to work anytime, anywhere. This is, of course, if you are working remotely. So it's easy to see, you know, you can access email all the time. You can get things on your phone. You know, work has followed you home. So determine how many hours each day you need to get your work done that doesn't leave you depleted by the end of the week. There will always be longer and shorter days in the future, but think about what works best for you and stick with it. And try to hold yourself to it. You know, if you're going to start at 7 a.m., then you need to finish by 4 p.m., take some breaks. And when the clock strikes four, let the workday end. Even if you have nothing to do in the evening, don't fill your free time with work because your brain just needs rest.
I just think it's so key. I think the main thing when it comes to burnout is setting boundaries. And I think that's what a lot of people wrote in too, is just that they have a hard time like knowing, you know, how to set boundaries or feeling like they can't set boundaries with things. And that's just a whole issue in itself, especially, you know, socioeconomically that we talked about last time, is that, yeah, sure, it'd be great if you can just set a boundary and stop working at this time. And to some degree, like, that's within your power in a lot of ways. But for a lot of people, they can't just like quit three of their four part-time jobs and have time for themselves. Like, it's a literal need that they have to keep up with these things, or you can't just stop taking care of your kids and blah, blah, blah. So it's about, I think, being able to set boundaries. It doesn't just mean like dropping everything and dropping your responsibilities to take care of yourself first, but it's about kind of just knowing yourself, knowing your energy and how you can manage your time best, in like being aware of those important priorities and where you can actually set the boundaries in a realistic way that you're not letting anyone down, but you're also not letting yourself down, and you're still prioritizing that you need in there as well. So it might be, you know, not everyone's boundaries are going to look the same. And just because someone else has, you know, 3 months of vacation time, you know, there's no use on getting jealous of them when that's not your reality. And you have to set your own boundaries where you can, and just kind of like work with what you have, but also in a way that you can manage and you'll still be okay at the end of the week and not feel overwhelmed. So setting boundaries where you can, I think, is the most important thing. And again, it just looks different to everyone. So we can't exactly tell you like, okay, you should do this here. But maybe if you have, you know, a friend group or someone that takes up a lot of your energy and you don't actually feel like that friendship serves you and you're spending a lot of time like making time for them and going to brunch with them and you don't actually enjoy their presence or they're stressing you out, like maybe just reevaluate your obligation to feel like you have to say yes to them all the time and actually set that boundary and say, no, sorry, I can't this week. I need to do this for me instead. Like, that's a boundary too. And it doesn't always have to be work. Like, there's other things in our lives that are supposed to replenish us but might actually stress you out. So I would say, like, be realistic with yourself about where you're putting that energy. And if in your free time, you're putting your energy into something that's just depleting it more instead of giving it back, I think that's a place to set a boundary too. But yeah, it's tough.
I was talking with a friend about that the other day, just about how as you get older, you realize that your time is so precious mm-hmm. and that it is so valuable and that you should not feel obligated into giving it to people who you don't want to give it to.
Right.
And obviously there are exceptions for this. Like you have to go to the doctor, you have to go to the dentist. Like I don't want to give the dentist my time, but I must. Or, you know, but again, with friendships and people that want to see you or, you know, say they're, you know, like, I don't even know. I'm trying to think like, you know, somebody invites you to go see a concert and you just like really don't like that kind of music, but you're like, oh, I should go to this thing or like, I don't know. Like you don't need to.
They're not entitled to your time and you're free.
Yeah. They're not entitled to space. Your time and you shouldn't feel obligated to just go to things because they're things, because it's good to go to things that you love and that will again replenish you, like Christy said. But it's something that, again, it doesn't come easily and it's hard to not feel obligated, especially, you know, when you're a people pleaser and, you know, you feel like you have to keep everybody happy all the time. But the person that's always going to suffer when you do that is yourself.
Yeah. And I think, too, sometimes setting the boundary is kind of like how a lot of people say that you should respect your own time as much as you respect other people. So if you write in the beginning of the week, you're like, okay, I know that I want to give myself one night to catch up on this book that I've been dying to read and just have the time for me. Then you write that in your planner. And when someone asks like, oh, are you free on Tuesday night? You just be like, no, sorry, I have plans. And don't sacrifice your own time that you know will replenish you for the sake of others. And that's a boundary that I think will help you at the end of the day. So for example, like that with a situation where it's a social thing that you feel obligated to, but you don't necessarily want to do it. Like, I think it's just important to respect yourself and prioritize your own time and what you really want to do with it above that sometimes. So I'd say, yeah, write things down and keep that as a promise to yourself. And prioritize that as something that is important to you and you will put above other things to the extent that you can and it's like realistic. Or if it's like a work happy hour or something where you feel like, oh, this would be really good to build relationships with my coworkers and stuff. Just because you say no one week and you have that boundary because you have this project for your online master's degree that you really should be putting time into, it doesn't mean that you're never going to go to a work happy hour again and they're never going to happen again. And I feel like that's also kind of a scarcity mindset that people have where they're like, oh, I have to do everything because, you know, I have this opportunity and I would feel bad saying no or and having FOMO and all of this. But it's like those things will come up again. And if that's a boundary you need to set this week and then next week you can go and enjoy that and it'll actually be okay because you won't be stressed out by this project, then do that then. You know, it's about like managing your own energy and where your priorities should be at the time. And they're always shifting too, and just kind of being aware of that. And I would say like sit down with yourself at the beginning of the week, give yourself your top three priorities and top three things that you want to do for yourself. And I think just treating mm-hmm. that as like a date with yourself, even if it's not doing something in solitude, but if it is like, oh, I want to work out and I want to see my friend, let's see if she's free to go to a workout class with me on Thursday night. And then it's something where it's like replenishing you in two different ways or, you know, just kind of like combining those things if you can, but not in a way that's going to stress you out more. So mm-hmm. it's a delicate balance for sure. And everyone's different in that. And we kind of talked about this actually in our, what was that episode? We did like a holiday, taking care of yourself with the holidays. I think this also kind of goes back to self-care in a lot of ways, because managing burnout is about understanding yourself, what stresses you out and what replenishes your energy and how to balance those things in your life day to day, week to week. Because it is just, it's a balancing act for sure.
Mm-hmm. So the next thing they say is, and this is kind of just piggybacking off of what we were just talking about, the number two thing is to do something just for you, just because it makes you feel good. Not everything you do has to always have a purpose. That's something that I think is really profound. Not everything you do has to have a purpose. Sometimes the best thing we do for ourselves are the ones that make no sense, but make us feel joy and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of each week, identify, this sounds like what you're just saying, identify what you're going to do for you each day. Give yourself at least 30 minutes to do something non-work related that is just for you and no one else. One of the biggest symptoms of burnout is not being able to enjoy yourself, which then leads to feelings of hopelessness and helplessness. When you focus all of your mental and emotional energy towards tasks you're missing out, wow, they should have put a comment there. When you focus all
Forbes, come you on. Focus all,
I know. When you focus all of your mental and emotional energy towards tasks, you're missing out on the joy of simply being in the moment. When all of your energy goes out and you get nothing in return, you become an empty vessel. In order to fill up that vessel, you need to start doing things that bring you a sense of joy, accomplishment, and relaxation. I just wanted to share something here that I was talking with my dad about. I saw my family last weekend. And that first sentence, the not everything you do has to have a purpose. We were talking about, it was Saturday, and we were just like laying around and talking about the day and like, what is a productive day? And I think, I don't know, maybe I first got onto this conversation with Sophie a while ago, or we were talking about it, that a day, if you made memories in a day, then it's a worthwhile day. You didn't have to accomplish anything. Like, you didn't have to, you know, solve world hunger. You didn't have to, you know, organize your entire bedroom. But like, you know, not everything you do has to be world and life changing. Like, if you made memories and you were happy, like, it was a productive day. And just like changing what the word productive means. So that was just something that I wanted to share that like meant a lot to me, to just like, at least for me to work on, and maybe you guys too, to think about like reframing what a purposeful day means to you, because it doesn't always mean checking off a mountain of to-do list. Like, it could just be doing something joyful for 30 minutes for yourself.
Yeah.
Just like this article says.
I think that relates back to what we talked about on the podcast before too, about how like time you enjoyed wasted isn't wasted time. You know, it's about prioritizing rest too, and rest is productive, and you don't have to see productive as only X, Y, or Z. Like, there's other things, like you just said, that can be productive, whether that's making memories or whether that's just laying in bed all day because you genuinely need the physical recovery from life. And that is productive to you. Even if you're not making memories, you're still replenishing something in your body that yourself can thank you for. So yeah, for sure. Definitely important to reframe that, because again, it's all about the expectations you're putting on it for yourself. And if you're the one telling yourself, oh my God, I should be doing this instead, this isn't productive, I would be so much more wise to use my time doing this other project, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're only managing your own expectations to stress you out more and put that weight on you that's just going to weigh you down, instead of just letting yourself live in the moment and enjoy that time. And then, I don't know, I just hate the feeling of like, you could have had a restful time, but you're too busy being stressed about other things that you weren't doing in that moment, that then it wasn't even restful. So it's definitely about like how you treat it, and how you think about it with yourself too.
My HR person at my new job, she's like, oh, I'm going to do a little email blurb at some point introducing you to the whole company. So send me like your name, some fun facts about you, a picture of you, and then the most recent meme in your phone, or like a meme you like in your phone. And I was like, okay. So I was going through my phone, and this was the first one. It's the first slide. It's like a 4-panel comic. The first panel is a guy saying, let's be productive. And the next panel is the brain saying, no. And then the next panel says the guy, okay, a day of relaxing it is. Fourth panel is the brain saying in all caps, no relaxing, only guilt. So I'll post that on our Instagram later. But I just thought it was very fitting.
Mm-hmm. The last point on this article is really kind of similar to what we just said. They all are interconnected, but it just says that number three, nothing is actually something. So once upon a time, when someone would ask, what are you doing? It used to be okay to say nothing, but social media has made it impossible for you to quote unquote do nothing, because on social media, you always have to be hashtag doing something. There's nothing wrong with spending a Saturday lying around the house, not traveling for holiday weekend, or not working on the weekends and posting or not posting about it. So you're not a machine that endlessly works without breaks. You're a human being. You need days off, time away from others, and hours and days that are simply about napping and reading books you've read a million times before. So again, I think that goes back to what we were just saying, that rest can be productive. Rest is productive, and you don't have to be doing something, and you don't owe anyone an explanation of why you're not doing anything. Like, I hate that idea that, like, when someone's like, oh, are you free? And you have to just be like, yeah, because you don't have plans. But if you really wanted that day to do nothing with yourself, like, you can just tell them, you know, like, sorry, I already have plans. Like, plans with yourself are just as valid as plans you make with other people. So I think it's important to, you know, follow through with those things on your calendar that you put for yourself. And you'll be so glad that you did that. I never regret taking time for doing something that I know is going to make me feel better or more refreshed after that. So, and I feel like it comes with maturity too. Like, I mean, I feel pretty confident in saying that, like, I don't really have much problem with FOMO now, and I don't feel bad about saying no to things because I want to do something for myself or whatnot. But I think when you're younger, especially you're fresh out of college, you're just used to, like, always wanting to be doing something with someone or never wanting to be the one that wasn't at that party or whatever. But I feel like the more that you don't do that and the more that you prioritize yourself in those moments, the easier it becomes. So if that's something that's hard for you, just, like, slowly practicing it and maybe just once a week making a plan with yourself. And that's not to say that you can't, like, switch them around if there is something that you really do want to do that's actually going to replenish you also in a different way that comes up. But just being consistent with that time that you schedule for yourself, and you owe it to yourself, I would say.
So another big part about burnout is that it physically can, like, it physically affects you, not just mentally, but that, you know, the body is not meant to take on, like, so much stress, like, time and time again, to the point where you're not getting enough sleep and you're tired and you're frustrated. It, like, it really does weigh on the body to the on, like, think of it like a machine. You know, when a machine is running on empty, it's not doing its best work, and then that machine is more likely to break down. And that's why you'll notice when you're really stressed or burnt out, you are twice as likely to get sick. I know when I was in college and I was not getting any sleep, I felt like I was constantly sick in college because I was never sleeping and not getting enough sleep.
And also being, like, in frat basements with, like, 20 million people on top of each other.
I think if I had been in a frat basement with 20 million people and I had been getting 9 hours of sleep a night, I would have had a better chance.
That's true. Fair point.
Anyway, so, like, there are so many things that, like, will weigh on your body, which then you won't be able to, like, it'll affect, you know, it can affect your dental health. It can affect your bones. It can, I mean, it can affect so many things that just, like, start falling by the wayside, because then, like, you're not eating as well. Maybe you're so stressed, you're not, like, keeping up with certain hygiene things, and, like, everything can kind of fall apart. And one thing I wanted to bring up is this concept of adrenal fatigue. This is something that one of my naturopathic doctors clued me into when I was going through some major stress in high school and college. And the adrenals, they're two small glands that sit on top of the kidneys, and they produce several hormones, and one of them is cortisol. When the body's under stress, and granted, I am not a doctor, don't take this as medical advice, just something for you to look up on your own, always a disclaimer. When the body is under stress, we produce and release these short bursts of cortisol into the bloodstream, and the adrenal fatigue theory suggests that prolonged exposure to stress drains those adrenals to the point where they're not replenishing and leads you to being in a state of low cortisol. And adrenal depletion and low cortisol can cause brain fog, low energy, depressive mood, salt and sweet cravings, lightheadedness, and other various symptoms. So
it just sounds like my day-to-day life.
Right. And me too. And I think it can put you in this place of, like, and one of the only ways to beat adrenal fatigue is literally resting. Like, that is the only thing you can do, because you have to let your body recharge. It's like when you're sick. I know that sometimes when I was like, working, like, even, you know, when I got COVID, granted, I would never want to go through what I went through again, but sometimes, like, when I would get a cold or a flu, I would almost feel, with the amount of busyness I pushed myself through in my life, I would be almost get excited or grateful that I was sick, because it would give me a chance to, to lay around for 5 days and just rest mm-hmm. and like read or watch TV or eat soup from a horizontal position, like just things that sounded nice to me.
But I think that also goes back to like the pressure you put on yourself, because in that moment you were allowing yourself, you gave yourself the free pass, like this is okay now. It's kind of like what we talked about in the past about mm-hmm. moving to a new city, and you don't feel guilty going to a bar by yourself because you know that you're new there and you don't know anyone, and you're like, well, this is what you do when you're new somewhere. And so you don't feel embarrassed or guilty about it because you know that story. But you're the one that's creating that narrative in your head of, you know, you could do that on a Saturday if you wanted, but you feel guilty about doing that when you're like, oh, I should be social, or, oh, I haven't done this yet, blah, 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 in a different context. But when you're sick, you allow yourself to like let that wall down and not feel guilty about resting. Yep. So it's kind of like adopting that mindset in other parts of your life is really what's going to help, I think.
And you have to think about it that your body is not indestructible. Like, especially as you start getting older, like, you are not indestructible. Like, you'll know that, like, I can't have 3 glasses of wine without a hangover. And I'm 26. Like, it's just like I used to be able to do that. Now I'm not. I used to be able to function on, you know, 4 or 5 hours of sleep and wake up like a chipper daisy the next morning. Now I need 8 to 9 hours of sleep or I'm a potato. Like, it's just the reality of the situation. My eyesight is getting worse. My knees are getting worse. Well, my hair is turning gray. You have to protect your body and you have to like take care of it. Mm-hmm. And like maybe adrenal fatigue is something that is affecting you by doing a go, go, go kind of a thing. And then it's making everything worse. Plus, you know, your mental state. So, and again, I know that there is privilege in resting. So I want to talk about the time you do have to rest. I want to talk about another concept called passive rest versus active rest. Now, this masterclass that I listened to. So as I was driving to Las Vegas, I listened to this masterclass by Dr. Alex Pang called The Power of Rest. And it was so interesting. It was like a 5-part series. And if you have the Calm app, I highly recommend this masterclass and all of their masterclasses because they're just fantastic ways to learn while you're driving or cleaning or doing whatever, kind of just like a podcast, mm-hmm. but in a condensed form of episodes or whatever. But in this Power of Rest class, he talked about a bunch of different chapters about, you know, why rest is important. The first one's called The Big Idea. The second one, The Science of Rest. The third one, Rest in Notable Lives, etc., showing different examples. But this one concept of active rest versus passive rest, I thought was fascinating. So active rest is something where your mind is engaged and focused, but it's still considered like a hobby or a pastime. Some examples of active rest are rock climbing, roller skating, painting, gardening, boxing, puzzles, games, fitness classes or dance classes, things where your mind is alert and focused to do an activity. Mm-hmm. But it's still considered like a hobby. It's not work. Those are examples of active rest. Passive rest is things like laying around, being on your phone, watching a movie or TV, sitting around chatting,
reading maybe.
Maybe reading. I would call reading passive rest. Reading is still a good distraction tool, but it doesn't necessarily require like brain alertness and focus in the same way that like rock climbing would, where you have to like, if you don't grab the right rock, you could fall. Kind of a thing. So this concept, he said they did a huge study of people, and when they had, say, an hour off per day to themselves, the people that chose passive rest showed lower, frame this differently. The people that chose active rest activities had higher levels of happiness and higher levels of mental recharging than those who chose passive rest. And the science behind this is that active rest engages the brain. And when the brain is actually engaged, it allows it to forget what you were doing previously for a time. Mm. For example, if you were doing work and you were really focused on this big project, just watching a movie on TV, yes, it's a temporary distraction, but the brain is not active. So it still is ruminating with that stress of that project. But say you take an hour and you do a dance class where you're learning a combination and your brain is having to think about this and focus on this, the people that chose those kind of activities showed much higher happiness levels, less stress levels, and their brain, they felt much more recharged and energized at the end of their rest session than the people who chose a passive rest. Mm-hmm. And that was such a revolutionary thing for me, because I almost always choose passive rest just because I'm tired. And I think when you're tired, you naturally think, I'm tired, I want to lay down and I want to sleep, mm-hmm. or I want to watch TV. And this is by no means saying don't ever watch TV or don't ever lay down with a good book. I am a huge advocate for those things. But knowing that study, and it makes a lot of sense when you think about like the brain's focus. And sometimes when you do something like a really intense workout, you know, you feel great afterwards because of those endorphins. And I think it's a similar concept with the brain and being able for the brain to focus on an activity. Because the brain wants to work. The brain wants to be alert. It naturally wants to do stuff. So I think giving it something to focus on allows you to kind of forget about the rest of your life for a while. And it makes a lot of sense. So it got me thinking that, like, you know, what is some kind of active rest that wouldn't be stressful for me to start up, that's something I could do? Maybe once a week I go bowling, or once a week I go roller skating, or, you know.
Didn't you buy roller skates during the pandemic?
I did buy roller skates, but they're horrible on my feet. I should probably sell them.
They were so cute, weren't they?
I know. They're not a good fit for my feet. It doesn't mean I'm giving up on roller skating, but I actually like the rental ones from the rink, even though they're gross, because they're so broken in that they're really comfortable. But anyway, so that's just something for you guys to think about, is when you have time off for yourself, or you're with whatever, are you doing passive rest or active rest? Or are you doing a combination? And do you think that experimenting with a little more active rest could help your brain feel better recharged? And again, it doesn't mean it has to be something really insanely stressful. You know, gardening and painting, I wouldn't consider those super stressful activities, because you're not trying to achieve anything super fantastic. You're not painting for the sake of becoming.
I'm painting to become Bob Ross. I don't know what you're talking about, but.
Well, then maybe you should choose a different activity for your active rest. But anyway, you should check out Dr. Alex Pang, and because he also wrote a book on the power of rest. I believe his book is called Rest. Just Rest.
That makes sense.
You should check him out and his the way he talks about it, because he did it in a really accessible way, which I really liked.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, because I remember, like, I've always said that the best way that I manage my own stress that I've found is good for my own energy spikes and everything is working out. And that's if every week I try and go to a boxing class, because I know that I love boxing, and that, like, especially that style of exercise and, like, doing something high intensity makes me feel good. And again, it's never always, or at some points it has been, it's not always about the physical thing, but, like, it genuinely clears my mind. And I think that makes a lot of sense, hearing that active rest thing, because it is good to do something where, you know, your mind is engaged elsewhere. And, like, when you're doing something like watching TV, I don't know about you, but, like, my mind is always wandering, and then it's easy to get that feeling of, like, I should be doing this, and the guilt and all of that. But when you're doing something where you're more focused on something else, even if it doesn't have to be physically demanding, like a workout, but that definitely, like, checks out in terms of me looking back, thinking about that. And I always feel better when I do things like that. So I know that that's something I have to prioritize in my own schedule for my own sanity. But yeah, that definitely, I'm trying to think of other examples of, like, good active rest. I feel like reading could be active rest, though, because your mind is, like, thrown into the book more so. Like, it's not super, like.
It could be, perhaps, especially if you're reading something that requires, like solving, like, mysteries or something that requires the brain kind of thinking about, like, the book or the events of how they're going to transpire, like something like that. Like, I'll have to look more into that. I just, like, know that the, you know, I was thinking of things like ice skating and rock climbing and, you know, actively solving a puzzle, like things where your brain
puzzles
has
are
to
good.
Solve things. And again, puzzles are like, you're thinking about this puzzle, but, like, it's not hard work. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that's going to feel like you're not giving up your rest time. Mm-hmm. And maybe, again, if you have an hour per day, do 30 minutes of active rest and then 30 minutes of passive rest. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be all or nothing. Or, you know, maybe you switch off every other day. Like, just find out what works for you. But that concept was something that I had never heard of. And it definitely made me want to think about making some changes in my own life. Because sometimes when I've taken an hour to rest, I haven't actually felt rested after. I just felt like time passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily want to continue that way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What about your self-defense classes? Did that ever feel like that seems like it would be an active rest kind of thing when you would do that every week?
I really enjoyed them. I don't do them anymore, right. Because they were so far away, and I haven't restarted anything yet with it.
No, but I'm just asking, like, in terms of looking back, do you think that helped yes. as an active rest period?
I really enjoyed the time I was there. I think I was extremely resentful of the fact that it took me an hour to drive there after work and then 30 minutes to get home. Ah. So as far as the overall picture, I was really frustrated about the amount of time I was losing. Mm-hmm. But the hour that I was in class, I enjoyed it because I didn't think about anything else. I definitely felt, especially when we were in the middle of a drill or I was in the middle of like a demo, like with, you know, learning a new move. Like if I lost focus, I was going to not do it or I wasn't going to learn it. So I had to stay alert. But then my 30 minutes of or my hour of bliss would be over when I realized that I would have to drive 30 minutes home. And then I was getting home at 8:30 and I still had to eat dinner and I was frustrated. But I think there can be things done to change that, like finding a class closer to home. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we are just going to dive into some of your responses and questions so we can share your perspectives on this. This was a question we got just about burnout in general. She says, unhealthy coping mechanisms versus healthy. I frivolously spend when I'm lacking inspiration. I came across something the other day that I really liked, and I feel like the 80-20 rule is something that you can apply to other aspects of your life. My mom always used it in reference to dating. You should like 80% about the person you're dating and 20% like, if you can live with it, it's okay. But I bought this bag of organic gluten-free granola, and I promise I'm going somewhere with this. I brought a bag of this granola, and on the back, it talked about this granola was founded by this nutritionist, and this was her philosophy, that one of the aspects of her healthy eating holistic philosophy is the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time, work on being your healthiest self and making choices as your healthiest self, and 20% of the time, participate in guilt-free indulgence. And she was framing it in the sense of food, you know, that like 80% of the time, eat food as your healthiest self, 20% of the time, eat whatever the heck you want, don't feel bad about it. I think when it comes to healthy versus unhealthy coping mechanisms, there's no such thing as really like, unless you're actively harming someone, it isn't necessarily unhealthy. Buying some stuff on Amazon for yourself, you know, after a bad day is not probably the best thing to do, but it's also like, it's not horrible. And like, there may be things that you need to do that you know are not like from your healthiest self. Like, this is not something I should do all the time, but 20% of the time it's like, okay, I can live a little bit. I can have, you know, two desserts instead of one. I can buy some stuff on Amazon. I can, you know, put off my work for an hour and watch an episode of TV. As long as you're focusing on doing that 20% of the time and then being your best self 80% of the time, I thought that was a pretty good way to look at it. And granted, I just got it off the back of a bag of granola. So if you don't like it, whatever, that's totally fine. I thought that was a good way of looking at it. That there's no like be one way all the time or like, you know, avoid this constantly. Just try not to make it a, you know, consistent habit all the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's a golden rule of moderation, you know, everything in moderation. I think that's a very classic 80-20 is how I look at a lot of things in life. 80% of the time is when I'm gluten and dairy free, and 20% of the time, you know what, YOLO. But yeah, again, I think it's hard when you look at anything cold turkey. So I think it's about having that self-awareness of allowing yourself a treat now and again when it does actually make you feel better. But when you're just using it as a crutch and you know that it's not actually serving you, and, you know, spending money because you feel stressed isn't making you feel less stressed, then maybe you could find a reason, like why, just ask why, I think, like why spend money? What about that makes you feel better? And maybe it's because like you like having something new, but you could do something instead that is a different way to have new things, like read a new book or something, you know, I don't know. Just I think ask yourself why that is. Do your bad habits in moderation and be easy on yourself, I would say, because you don't want to stress yourself out more by being like, I shouldn't be doing this to cope with it. So yeah, but mm-hmm. definitely
you don't want to shame or blame yourself. Mm-hmm.
But healthy coping mechanisms, I would say, is definitely kind of just already what we've talked about, is like prioritizing yourself and taking time for those things that make you feel the most you or make you feel accomplished, but in like a personal sense rather than like an external accomplishment sense, and the things that you really want to do. Healthy coping mechanisms can be anything from like having brunch with your friends because you miss spending time with them, and you usually prioritize your side hustle on Sundays, but you want to take the time to catch up with friends that you've missed. Or, you know, if that's going to your little cousin's baseball game that's on a weeknight that sometimes your coworkers hang out, but you're going to say no to them because you want to go and you love being around little kids, like things like that. Just like knowing what makes you feel good and allowing yourself time to, you know, prioritize those things. Again, I feel like I'm kind of a broken record at this point, but that's really, I think, at the core of how to combat burnout. And there's not really just going to be like one magic thing that makes it go away, because it's such a personal phenomenon and how it affects everyone too.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to read another story from one of our listeners. She said, in response to when did you feel the most stressed or overwhelmed, she says, I feel overwhelmed when I have so much to do with a mix of work and friend things. I'm still not used to having pre-pandemic busy schedules, and having those now are a lot harder for me than they used to be. And work creates a lot of stress in general because I have imposter syndrome, and I try to not, but I want to be 110% amazing, and I fear I don't live up. So first of all, I totally get the whole like pre-pandemic thing. I think we talked about this in our episode with the therapist that we interviewed, and we talked about, I don't remember the exact term, but I think it was like reactivity threshold or something like that, where your threshold for what you can handle changes after a traumatic event. And I think a lot of us are still suffering that, you know, it's very real. I've definitely experienced it.
This actually is a excerpt from a burnout work stress article from New York Times that I think is really interesting. It's called Your Body Knows You're Burnt Out. And this is back to the whole like, okay, well, what are things you can do to fix it kind of thing? This paragraph just says, despite popular culture coverage of the issue, burnout can't be, quote, fixed with better self-care. Dr. Maslach says, I don't know who he is, but he's in this article. So in fact, this implication only worsens the problem because it lays blame and responsibility on those with burnout and implies that they should do more to feel better, which is not the case, she said. However, some lifestyle choices can make burnout less likely. Social support, for instance, can help, Dr. Gold said. This could include talking to a therapist or meeting with friends, even if over Zoom. It may also help to take advantage of mental health or exercise benefits offered by your employer. Sleeping more can help too. So if you're suffering from insomnia, talk to a doctor about possible treatments. So, yeah, I think it's, again, like us trying to say, oh, all you have to do is reprioritize and spend time doing other things. Like, that's not the end all be all of it. I think that's just one small segment of, you know, like we talked about last time, sometimes there's just responsibilities that you can't necessarily let go of, and you can't always blame yourself for burnout because it is like a systemic thing that we're all expected to do so many things, and so many things require so much of our time, and you can't just get rid of responsibilities. But we're talking about like little ways that you can manage it in your own self. So again, like, don't blame yourself for it, because no matter, there's some instances where like even the small things you do can't fix the whole problem, and it is more of a like broader issue. But there's just, I don't know, it's hard to say, because I don't want to be like, okay, there's no hope, but I don't want to be like, you can fix it all yourself either. Like, it's somewhere in the middle too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a tough situation because it's like societal and personal in the same token. But I do think the social support thing is really important, whether that is a therapist or just like talking to your friends about it, and, you know, having them talk to you about how they're feeling, and having that support of just like being heard, I think, even if it's not something that you can, you know, have them fix, but just like having that understanding that it's not just weighing on your shoulders and you're keeping it in, but just like talking about it with someone is very important. Yeah. Too.
Okay, so we are going to wrap up this episode. Thanks so much for listening. As always, I just tripped over my words there, my bad. But we're going to wrap up with one of our question boxes from last week, where we asked you guys, our listeners at Fingers Crossed Pod, what do you do to help yourself when you feel stress or anxious thoughts coming on? The prompt is, I mitigate stress by, this first one says, talking to my partner about how I am feeling. That's definitely really important to have a support system around you and have people that you can open up to and discuss things with. So definitely agree.
Yes, lean on your loved ones. The next one says, smoke weed. You know what?
You know
what helps you?
Sometimes you gotta. Next one says, I don't care what I'm doing. I stop and take deep breaths. And if I'm at work, I will walk around the office. I think that's really good. Taking deep breaths does help center you and lowers your blood pressure. It's, again, a biological or like a physiological thing. Mm-hmm. So usually taking 4 to 5 deep breaths really will help me calm me down. I just have to get to the point where I am not being so stubborn in my stress that I refuse to take deep breaths on purpose. Yeah, don't be like me. The next one says yoga. That's definitely a good one. I think yoga definitely is an active rest as well, mm-hmm. because you're focusing on your flow, you're focusing on the positions, and there's a lot of balance involved. Like sometimes in yoga, when I would be doing a pose and I would get distracted mentally, I would fall over. So it's a good one for focus.
Yeah, meditation too, I feel like goes with that. The next one says, I change my environment. It really helps when I'm overwhelmed. I'm the same way. When I'm like feeling antsy or stress is building up, I just have to like move and go somewhere else and have a change of scenery, and it helps a lot, just like a refresh.
Definitely. This one says, count and turn on a song by Janet Jackson called Better Days. I'll have to listen to that soon. I'll have to listen to that when I'm in a bad mood next time.
Writing things down, taking a hot bath, giving myself a break, and listening to my body.
Nice. This one says, going on a walk outside. Yes. I think a walk in fresh air helps.
Amen.
Most everything. Won't solve your problems, but it will certainly mitigate. Mm-hmm.
Listening to music.
Yeah. This next one says, creating plans. I think sometimes that can definitely help too with, you know, scheduling, writing things down in your planner, making plans with friends for the future.
Ooh, this one's good. It says, grounding, barefoot in the grass. I've heard of that, but I don't know that much about it. It's something about like actually having your feet on the earth. There's like I don't know if it's scientific, but it's a thing.
I'll have to try that too.
Grounding.
This one says, carving out downtime for reading, home-cooked meals, and a long shower.
Mm-hmm.
I think a long shower makes a big difference too. Sometimes like I'll just be in such a bad mood and then I'll take a shower and get totally clean and I'll be like, all right, wasn't so bad.
Yeah. Sleeping, or at least trying to, or laying down. Yes, sleep is such an important one. And that would always be the first thing that would go when I had too much on my plate, and still is.
But. Yeah. Something I read that I thought was really interesting is that if you are really exhausted and you need to rest, like, and you want to try and take a nap or go to sleep at night, that if you can't sleep, the next best thing to sleep is lying down with your eyes closed. Almost like fake sleep or
pretend
sleep junior.
You're asleep.
But pretty much, like, if by closing your eyes and laying down, it slows your heart, it slows your blood pressure, it relaxes your whole body. And if you aren't actually sleeping, it still is restorative for the body. You know, it's like I said, it's second best. So if you have a hard time napping, sometimes just laying down with your eyes closed for 10 minutes will help reset your body more than just, you know, sitting around on your phone.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks. So that was a little bit more talking about burnout that we didn't want to rush into one episode last week because we just had so much to say. So hopefully you enjoyed this 2-part episode, especially because we got a lot of good feedback that this is something, and a lot of engagement just on those stories about how much that you all had to say about the topic. So definitely something that is pertinent to y'all, it seems. So hopefully these 2 episodes in this little mini series were useful or enlightening or gave you some perspective that's a little more manageable for burnout, because again, we're all dealing with it, different scales, it looks different from person to person, and we're all just kind of trying to make it through this world. So give yourself grace. I would challenge you to, when you're making your plan for this upcoming week, carve out some time for yourself and do something that you normally wouldn't for yourself, and plan some active rest time if you can, and see what a difference it makes in your day to day. So thanks for listening.
Absolutely.
It's been a joy. I've definitely learned a lot and had some kind of epiphanies listening to this and having this conversation that I will take with me in my own stressful week and just trying to get through. So it's been good.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here, you guys. And we will see you 2 weeks from now with a new episode on the 29th of March, moving into bi-weekly after this. So don't go too far. Take some time for yourselves, but we'll see you in 2 weeks.
And until then, keep your fingers crossed.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Bye.